This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. And we're going to roll right into it. You're on the clock with Erin Green on this Thursday, the 16th of June, 2022. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. I've got two guests joining me today. I think it's going to be an interesting conversation. So I'm going to give you the call in line so you can join the conversation. You can call us at 323. That's 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us at 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. And that's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. Well, let's get the show started. I got a little housekeeping guest, but it's going to be very quick this morning. Yesterday, we had a Culture Wednesday instead of a Culture Thursday, and I found songs talking about bad Bahamian women. And some of them not so bad. They just make us feel bad because we're not in control of our feelings sometimes. But I've come today to tell you this. Don't never talk bad about Bahamian women, okay? In fact, don't even include Bahamian females in that conversation. Just don't do it. I want to apologize to whoever I offended yesterday. Because whoever sent them mosquitoes to me last night to tag me up, we could have talked about it. You didn't have to do that to me. And I give you a little science lesson in case you didn't know. I'm not being sexist, right? I'm not saying a mosquito had to have been a woman. It had to have been a woman. The mosquitoes that bite are females. They're female. If the mosquito bit you, it's a female mosquito. And that's how we know, right? That's how we know that the bad mosquitoes are women. Because only the female mosquitoes bite. So I'm not being biased or sexist there when I say that. But we should not apply that same thinking to women, human females. That would just be unfair. That would just be unfair. And so, you know, I put together that playlist hopefully to cause us to reconsider the way we think about these things. Because we've been thinking about these things for decades and decades and decades, all the way back to George Simonet and his 8 babies. Okay. Let's move on. BARC is in Fox Hill. BARC is offering free spay and neuter services in the Fox Hill community. Call 427-7729. Now, you can't call BARC on other people's animals, right? But if other people insist that their animals are also your animals, then maybe you should consider calling BARC for the sake of the animals. For the sake of the animals. Also, I've been seeing this number flashing out there, and I'm just so excited. Did you know about the pothole patrol? There is a pothole patrol. So here's what you do. When you see a pothole, you take a photo and you send a picture and the location to this number, 242-376-0936. 242-376-0936. I want to say congratulations to the winners of the tickets for the Acklands Island Cascarilla Heritage Festival Meet and Greet, which is at Frankie's Gone Bananas. If you want to get tickets for that event, you go to Screws and Fasteners World and call them, or go there directly to purchase tickets and get details for the event. I will see you there this Saturday at Frankie's Gone Bananas. Remember, the Acklands Island Cascarilla Heritage Festival is the 7th through 11th of July. Also, another quick note. The government of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas cordially invites you to join us in commemorating the life of Sir Sidney Poitier, Saturday, the 18th of June at 7 p.m. That sounds like that could be around the same time as the meet and greet. Anyway, it's a cultural homage and memorial to the late Bahamian actor, producer, writer, diplomat, and civil rights leader. It will be live streamed from Nassau on ZNSBahamas.com. And the service on 19th of June, 2022, there will be service at St. Francis Xavier Cathedral, Nassau, the Bahamas at 2 p.m. You can also watch the feed on Facebook as well. Celebrating the life of our very own. Now, just another quick note before we push forward. There's a story saying that the derelict building on Cumberland Street has finally been cleared, that lot has been cleared. And I just want to say that maybe we should emphasize the historic nature of the building. And I think that's important because I imagine that the building is in the state of dereliction, right? It's derelict because of the nature of the legislation pertaining to historic buildings. We need to check that out. The government has this awesome responsibility of balancing. It's like a balancing act. They might as well be a juggler. They have to balance, right, the need to preserve the past with the need to provide for the present and the need to prepare for the future. And so that takes me to another story just very quickly in the Nassau Guardian on page A9. Entitled Unfair to Evict Abaco Dome Residents Without a Plan, Chamber President says, and that's the president of the Abaco Chamber of Commerce. He is absolutely right. It makes no sense to evict people without a plan. He says that, look, Abaco is still in a critical crisis because not only do you have the residents who've remained, the residents who've returned to try and rebuild, you also have the workers, the manpower, the woman power, the people who have come to rebuild Abaco. And so this conversation, Ministry of Housing is and the Disaster Recovery Authority is woefully, woefully insufficient. It is woefully insufficient. It's like when you say something to your Grammy and your Grammy, she just reads you for filth. Like, she just sit down and read you an essay of why you're not going to do anything for the next month. And she shows you how in your mere words, the very few words that you uttered to her, you revealed your plan, your lack of thinking, your lack of preparation, everything, one time. Okay? What is heartening is that there's been an announcement that Hubert Alexander Ingram, former prime minister of the country, is gifting a town center. Now, this is good, right? I wish he would gift a couple of housing complex because the last complex he built turned out to be the only building that really withstood, one of the only buildings that withstood Dorian. He could build anything he want in Abaco. I don't care. He could use my money and build it. I don't care. But building a town center is also about entrenching commerce and business, which homes and people's lives will center around, right? So this is a great, great thing, and I'd love to hear more about that in the near future. Just a last note, guys. Just a quick note. Listen, remember we had 3 weeks of rain, almost like hurricane? The mangoes can be a little watery. This first set of mangoes, the whole season may be a little watery. The mango profile has been changed by the weather. That's just nature. If you got a ganep tree, go out and check your ganep tree. There are ganeps on the tree, ganeps on the ground. And a quick note, anybody in Inagua have juju-jus? Quick text, I had to drive through Bamboo Town. It's filthy, derelict vehicles and garbage all over Bamboo Town. Who is the MP for that area? And Aaron, please remind the Minister of Health that the Bahamas is under PAHO and not the CDC. Absolutely, although I can understand the Bahamas leaning to and engaging the CDC, but it's important to note that we are a Commonwealth country. Yes, yes, Texter, thank you. Okay, producer, I think the phone line, one of those phone lines is my guest, right? But there's another phone line flashing. Let's go to the caller. Good morning, caller.
Godly day to stock in a waste along with you, Aaron. Pretty eyes, Grant.
Good morning, Brayman. How you doing?
I'm holding. The reason why I call, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I love you and I appreciate you and you are an international speaker. But could do you such a good job because mosquitoes stings and not bites.
Hold on. Mosquitoes don't bite you?
Mosquito does not bite people. They stings people.
They stings them? These
yeah.
Mosquitoes bit me.
No, is it no?
That's
no,
how I know it's a vendetta, Brayman.
They stung you.
That's how I know it's a vendetta, Brayman. They
but
may just
yeah.
sting you because you nice use call every day and tell me about my pretty eyes. But they just bite me, Brayman. Thank you.
Anyhow, I hope you would make that mistake again.
Thank you, Brayman.
All right. Thank you.
Listen, if I didn't know how vital mosquitoes were for the entire planetary system, right, the whole ecosystem, if I didn't know how vital mosquitoes were to the process of me having mangoes every year, I would kill every single mosquito in the world.
Yeah, later.
Yes, sir. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Right here. Now, I know what Brayman was calling for, but he said you got pretty eyes and he love you.
That's enough.
You're visually impaired. I don't know if he knows the color of your eyes, but anybody leave that there. Now, we talking about the pothole, or one thing was coming around my phone last night, too.
Uh-huh.
The Pothole
Patrol
Association, I think it is. Eh?
Yeah.
Put a big thing all over my phone last night. But now, I've been talking about this for years. I've been telling everybody I grew up in the valley. Between East Avenue, Centerville, one home my mother built, and the next one on Madera Street, mm-hmm. another home my birth mother built. But there's a road called Mount Royal Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
There's another road called Rosetta Avenue.
Uh-huh. Rosetta Street.
Mr. Perry Christie grew up on Rosetta Street. That's the one that St. George's is.
Yeah. No,
the one west of that is Mount Royal Avenue. That's the one where Cleeso's and Home Fabrics and all of them is.
Yeah,
now, Mr. Perry Christie bragged about how he'd been in the House of Assembly for first there, and I was voting before he gone in the House of Assembly. He ran in there in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember Mount Royal Avenue ever being paved.
Yeah.
From growing up there, from Wolf Road to Hawkins Hill is a main street going from Wolf Road, all those businesses over Hawkins Hill, past an immigration down to Shirley Street. That's a main thoroughfare.
You don't ever remember it being paved?
That got more craters in it and everything. And I talked to the Prime Minister about it.
Uh-huh.
He grew up in the valley himself, Royal Avenue.
Listen.
And I've been talking to Joe, what is the young man now? Jomo Campbell.
You need to get on it. Sparky.
Headquarters is right on Mount Royal Avenue. It's sitting on Mount Royal Avenue. And I asked Jobo Campbell, for God's sake, before you say you've been in there 5 years, pave Mount Royal Avenue from all those craters and everything. Flowers even have a number shop there. Bahamas Buster Truck have a warehouse there. McCartney have a paint shop there.
Thank you, Sparky.
All those businesses, fix Mount Royal Avenue.
Thank you, Sparky. Listen, Well, I gonna tell the people. Sparky tell me, I could say it. I's a Saxons and the valley is a porthole. I could say that, right? I mean, Sparky tell me I could say that. But here's the more important thing. You call it the valley, which means that it's more than just paving the road. It means that it requires an environmental and structural change to the entire area. Right? That's what it means. And it's going to take not just a long-term plan, it's going to take a long-term restructuring, renovation of the entire area. So I'm hoping that we hear the government talking about water and flooding mitigation plans, talking about putting a temporary artificial lens under the Pinewood Park to capture water. Maybe this is something that needs to be seriously considered for the area we call the Valley as well. Thank you very much for that, Sparky. Okay, caller, last caller. I got you. You're on the clock.
Yes, Ms. Green.
Good morning. Morning.
Yeah, so tell me now, how... You can hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, how come these ministers write these 500,000 per term ministers, right? In the news for things that are not under their portfolio, man.
That's because they're having a hard time holding the party in line.
Yeah, they distracted, all them is distractions.
That's what it sounds like, hey.
Yeah, man, like the Minister Bell, he should be in the news for livable wage.
Yeah.
And the Minister for Housing, she should be in
exactly.
The news
because here's what you housing. Do. Because here's what you do, right? If now that they've made the submission that they believe there was abuse of public funds, right? What you do now is you got to sell the things.
Man,
you
got to reduce them things as assets. But them wasting our time for $500,000 plus we paying them for time. That ain't no asset, though.
No.
We can't get nothing. We can't sell them.
No. Yes, we can sell them.
Huh?
I selling them. I going up there. I selling them, buddy.
You can sell Keith Bell for $1. You can't sell them. That ain't gone.
I mean, listen, I am not allowed to crack those jokes right now. I got to go. I was about
to
say
something.
Yeah, but
you need to stop around. Them things is assets. You could bring them and put them in the governor's residence or the future prime minister residence they can build. But,
listen,
but
really,
I'm curious, John, how much these people spending for the apprentices and they all say they making them $500,000 per term plus breaks and plus contract ability to give contracts to them, they cousins to hold for them and the like. And,
listen,
anyway, thank you.
You're welcome. Oh boy, the point is, this headline is important. Abuse of public funds is indefensible. It's indefensible. You cannot look at people who had to sit with their family members who were dying, whether within the hospital system or outside without the hospital system because they couldn't get in. I'm being told that due to a lack of resources, we are unable to provide this life-saving service to you and your family member. Right? The political class is not aware of itself. It's not aware of the duties assigned to it, the duty of care assigned to it. But we have time. The way to deal with it, though, is you want answers to these questions, we have to invest the funds that we do have into creating mechanisms like organizations to collect the information, to interrogate the information and assess it, and then put it together and present it to the public. In a way that the public can use it easily. And that's a very important part. One more text, and then we ask, hi, Lady Green. Please ask our MPs to address the holds on Golf Course Boulevard and Imperial Park. Been begging for months now, sent emails and calls, no response. Producer, let's go to a break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to bring in our guests. Good morning. You're on the clock with Erin Green. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
This is when they start to fight all day long and into the night. Licking one another with pan and pot, and he bought one another with rock.
A local paper in Grand Bahama is back every Tuesday as a section of the Nassau Guardian. Available at local stores, gas stations, pharmacies, Western Bakery, and Bellevue Gifts. Daily and, of course, on Tuesdays too. Want to reach your Grand Bahama audience? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the Solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Aaron Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
Preparing for a hurricane can make all the difference in safeguarding lives. By knowing what actions you should take to reduce the effects of hurricane disaster, get all the facts of the potential of having insurance, impact-resistant windows, home emergency power, surge protectors, essential supplies, plus so much more before the storm, after the storm, where to purchase building or cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, which auto shop to go to after driving through flooded streets, and more. The Nassau ad will help to make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity, plus 15 radio commercials. Contact us today, 302-2300, or your account executives. Will you be prepared?
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning. Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Aaron Green. And I want to zoom right in to the Zoom room. And let me introduce the joining me this morning, Lauren Glinton, representative from Equality Bahamas, and Ms. Gaynell Curry, a Bahamian human rights expert and independent expert member of the United Nations Permanent Forum of People of African Descent. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron.
Morning. And today we are here to talk about the third session of Equality Bahamas' CEDAW Convention Speaker Series, where we're focusing on Article 4 with presenter Gaynell Curry. In the lead-up to the 30th anniversary of the Bahamas' ratification of the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, that's CEDAW, Equality Bahamas is hosting the series looking at Article 4 on special men, and that'll be 10 a.m. this Saturday, June 2022, and that's Saturday the 18th. And so I guess I want to start by asking you to briefly introduce yourself, and let's get right into what this series is and what CEDAW is.
All right. Well, thank you, Aaron, for having us. My name is Lauren Glinton, and I'm a volunteer with Equality Bahamas. As you mentioned, our session with Gaynell is this Saturday at 10 a.m. on Zoom. We are hosting this series on the third Saturday of every month, leading up to the 30th anniversary of ratification next October. So this is the third event, as you mentioned. We looked at Articles 1 and 2 in April with Patricia Scholz, who is a Swiss lawyer and former member of CEDAW, and the three last month with Nigerian public policy analyst Esther Egobamian-Mashilia. So we are really excited to have a local Bahamian expert joining us on Saturday. Gaynell is one of our frequent collaborators, so we really enjoy working with Gaynell. And if you're interested in joining the Saturday session, you can register at tiny.cc/CEDAW4.
That's tiny.cc/CEDAW4. All right. Okay, Gaynell.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much, Lauren, for your introducing this series. And thank you, Aaron, for having us on the show. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity to be on your show. I've listened to it quite a number of times, and I find it always very, very interesting. So I'm Gaynell Curry, and I have been working for a number of years, 3+ years, working on human rights, particularly the rights of women and girls. And I'm more recently looking at a broader gamut of rights, looking at economic, social, and cultural rights, the Sustainable Development Goals, and more recently at the rights of people of African descent and issues around racial discrimination. So that a lot of that work I've been doing internationally, and it's always a pleasure to collaborate locally with Equality Bahamas and others on how we can realize some of these international human rights standards here in the Bahamas. So thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. Let's start with the series and then sort of get back to CEDAW and the Bahamas' participation with CEDAW. The series focuses on special measures, right? So can you tell us, Gaynell, what are special measures? Well, so, or maybe, do you want me to read the article first and then we go into what special measures are?
That's fine. You can go ahead and read the article. It's the article of, it's article 4 of the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. So go ahead and read the article. That's fine.
All right. So Section 1 of Article 4 says, adoption by states' parties of temporary special measures aimed at accelerating de facto equality between men and women shall not be considered discrimination as defined in the present convention, but shall in no way entail, as a consequence, the maintenance of unequal or separate states. These measures shall be discontinued when the objectives of equality of opportunity and treatment have been achieved. Section 2 says adoption by state parties of special measures, including those measures contained in the CEDAW Convention, aimed at protecting maternity, shall not be considered discriminatory. So that's Article 4. Of CEDAW.
Yes, and the reason I hesitated a little bit, Erin, is because I know that that's heavy to hear for the first time, and for some of us to maybe to grasp just by listening to it, because it's quite a heavy wordy text. Mm-hmm. But essentially, what temporary special measures are, they're a set of measures or proactive affirmative measures. So we've often heard them referred to as affirmative actions, and many of us know what affirmative action is, particularly when we think about affirmative action in the context of people of African descent in the United States, and they're accessing certain opportunities, say for example of universities. We know of affirmative action in the case of South Africa, for an example, with the post-apartheid era, where they were thinking about how can we bring more blacks into the system that had been predominantly run by whites. So we're talking about something that is a positive, proactive, affirmative measure, mm-hmm. that aims at accelerating the improvement of the position of women with a view to achieving substantive equality with men. So we're talking about something that is taken by the government to ensure that women and men can have equal rights within their country. So it looks at social and cultural changes that are necessary to correct past and current inequalities between men and women, with a view to having a more equitable society as we move forward. The thing that we should think about when we think about these measures is the word temporary. They're not intended to be there forever. So it's about, it means you're going to, for a time period, put some systems in to ensure that women can have the same rights as men, or can actually realize their rights on the same footing as men. So for an example, if we take something in our own country, specifically with respect to women, we can look at at Aaron, we talked about this some time ago, the situation of the police force, for an example, or the defense force. To what extent have women been brought into those organizations on equal footing of men? To what extent have they rise to the ranks on equal footing of men? To what extent do they lead on equal footing as men? Do we need to put some measures in place to encourage more women, to encourage them up the ranks, and to have them in leadership women? And if we do that, for what period would we need to do that? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? Are we looking at a percentage of women that we want to have in leadership or that we want to have on the force? So that's the temporary nature of it. And that is what we would be trying to do to ensure that there's more equity in those organizations in terms of women and men, and that we have diversity in leadership. And for me, diversity is always a positive thing when we're talking about decision making. So we have diverse groups of people around the table. You're bound to have a better outcome at the end of the day. And one more point on this issue. When we talk about the other point on it, in addition to it being temporary, it's special. It's not saying that women are special, although I think personally we are. It's saying that it's special because it's a particular point, a particular issue, a particular measure that we're trying to especially look at this point, at this period, that would ensure that there's greater equality between men and women in society. So that is what temporary special measures are. Simply put, it's more about affirmative action that ensures that there is more equity or equality in society between men and women.
Absolutely. So like using the example of the police force, let's say that if we looked at the numbers of officers and say we had 3,000 male officers, but only 750 female officers, right? Would a temporary special measure be to, for the next 2 years, only invite women to apply for the force and have 2 years of cadets that are only female, and then at the end of 2 years, look at your retention numbers and how, if you've increased the number of female officers sufficiently to then halt the program and go back to your normal recruitment procedures?
That would certainly be a temporary special measure. You're temporarily imposing it for 2 years or whatever, 2-3 years, and you are specifically targeting a group of women that should be moved or somehow given a special measure, if you will, for a specific period of time within a specific organization. But before you apply those temporary special measures, I think it's going to be very, if we were to apply, let's say, to the police force or the defense force or any other organization for that matter, we would need to do the necessary research to ensure that we have the right numbers, to show we have the disaggregated data, to talk about recruitment levels, rates of women and men, retention levels of women and men, why women are leaving, and how can we address that or stem the fact that they might be leaving for whatever reason, family reasons or whatever. Why are women not getting to the top? How many women are getting to the top, and at which rate are they arriving there in comparison to those who have been in their ranks? And then once we've done that and we have that data with us, then we can say, okay, temporarily we're going to do this, and our next 2 or 3 intakes are going to be 100% women. I know in South Africa they did this with respect to their foreign service and many of their own, the public service sector after the end of apartheid. And so they said for the next 5 years, we're only going to be taking people of African descent, Black people, sorry. In that case, it wouldn't be people of African descent, Black people, because there were none or very few. They made up like 1% of the foreign service. So they wanted to increase that number. And that would have been, say, for a 5 to 10 year period until they had Blacks in the service that can move up the ranks and can do to have the necessary training and to carry out those functions of foreign service officers. So that's the idea. It's for a temporary period. We'll be doing the same thing, trying to do that. But what I must stress that it is important that before we take on any special measures, that we do our homework, that we understand what we're talking about, because there's going to be opposition to it. There's always opposition to these things. Why are we favoring women? Why did I hear it all the time in my work? What about the men? Why are you discrediting men? You want women to have everything. That's why it's important for us to do our homework, get the numbers right, and then see how we're going to be. And look at several options and talk to those who are in the ranks because they should have a voice in how this actually comes about. Because the last thing you want to do is impose something and then it's completely blocked within the rank and file of a particular organization. And I can very easily see that happening if it's not really well understood. Because mm-hmm. persons have been working and they feel that they deserve their promotion, and why should they give it up? Because you want to promote more women or you want to have 50%. But I think it's important that we do that and we not get caught also in a trap of saying, well, okay, well, let's only do recruits. You know, what about the women that are in the ranks? How do we try to get up to the top of the ranks in the forces? So yes, that would be a very good approach if we do our homework and understanding what is the current situation and how we ought to be changing that. So that's an example of a temporary special measure.
Okay, wow. So now another quick question. The example of the police force, that's sort of like, that's like a collective group, right? That we are, or a space. Can individuals apply for a temporary special measure?
An individual can apply for specific compensation, but the idea behind or to have their right, their particular right recognized in law. So that's the temporary special measure is intended to be more about systemic discrimination, institutional okay. discrimination. So we are talking about how can we ensure that groups of women are able to realize their right. There ought to be separate or additional processes where individual women can say, hey, my rights have been violated. I have not been allowed to move up the ranks. And in that case, you would be looking for compensation for yourself. And that is accountability for the infringement on your individual right, rather than the special measure where we want to put in place, how can we change the system? And how can we change the institution? How can we ensure that our institutions are more reflective of how we look in our societies and in our society? So that is intended to be more of an institutional systemic reform or adjustment or change that we're trying to make. And it's a little bit, it might get confusing if we think about it in terms of individuals. There should be separate processes. Say, for example, if you're in the police force and you believe you've been overstepped for promotion, there ought to be in place, and I'm, you know, a place where you can say, have your concern, a complaints mechanism within that process. And I'm not saying that there is not one. I do not know, to be honest with you, but I can assume that there would be one in place where you can have your individual complaint or individual concern aired. And if you do that and there's nothing, individuals can always take their situations forward. If you feel that you've exhausted all the local measures, you've taken it within your rank and file, you've taken it through human resources, you've taken it to the labor board, you've taken it to the courts, you've done whatever you can in this process, then you can put an individual complaint internationally to the UN, to the Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women, to others, and say, you know, or I have had my rights violated, and here's how, and these are the circumstances. Then the Special Rapporteur can say to the government of the Bahamas, Mary Jean's rights have been violated in this way. Can you explain, or can you tell us more on what's happening? Or can you look into this particular situation? So that's how the individual complaint can arise. You can ultimately go that way, but that would not necessarily come into the special, the temporary special measures approach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. I'm very disappointed because I need some special measures, maybe not temporary. Against mosquitoes.
I heard your comments earlier. We probably all need that. They're attacking us all. This is the time and season for it.
Right. But the thing with mosquitoes is that they are naturally occurring part of the environment, right? Like, mm-hmm. I can't just get up and say, I'm going to get rid of all the mosquitoes, or mm-hmm. even suggest to the state that they in some way should help me like get rid of all of the mosquitoes. So this process takes into account the entire environment, right? Yeah. And not just your particular situation, but the entire environment, and then yes. determines what measures can be put in place that will either uplift you, protect you, or restore you to balance or equality without entirely upsetting the environment as a whole, even if the measures are temporary.
Yes. Yes. So it's the idea is to have a society that embraces all persons and give men and women, boys and girls, equal opportunities to realize their rights. It's about the substantive rights of individuals in society. That's rights that are de jure or on the law books, and the rights that are de facto. In reality, can I realize my rights? Even though the law may say, yes, this, or the regulations within an organization may say, yes, this is the situation, and have really clearly well written. And then in reality, it doesn't happen. So we want to ensure the idea behind temporary special measures is that we're actually looking at substantive rights in law and in practice of men and women to ensure mm-hmm. there's equality there, to ensure that there is no discrimination, that we're saying that we're not saying that women cannot do this because they're women, or men can do this because they happen to be men. So we need to see where, if and where there are disparities mm-hmm. and then address them through temporary special measures so that we have better representation in our organizations of men and women and other marginalized and vulnerable groups within society so that they can be represented we see a true representation of ourselves in our major organizations and institutions. The same can be said of politics, and that discussion has been had a lot recently. Mm-hmm. Do we have sufficient women around the cabinet table? At the moment, yes. In the past, we've had one. is that person really going to represent all women? We would want women around the table to bring a female perspective to the table, to bring those issues that are relevant to us, not to say that men can't, and they often do. Mm-hmm. We have some strong advocates for women's rights who happen to be men. But we want to have more women around the table. So what do we need to do to ensure that that happens, that we have women in leadership position? So we know that educating women has worked tremendously in the country. We have over 70% graduates from UB, and many of the universities, even in the region, the University of the West Indies, are women. So the women are educated and they can do the job. But when you see the leadership role in the private sector and the public sector in political parties and in the political realm, the numbers don't bear out. So 70% graduates, we're getting the prize for this, then the next, and we are underrepresented in political sphere, in the leadership sphere, in the private sector as well. So how do we actually do that? Do we take temporary special measures to introduce a quota system that mm-hmm. would say that women should have 30% of all seats in parliament? That I think is going to be opposed vehemently by everyone, or nearly everyone. But that's one way. Or do we say to political parties, you are to have 30% of your representatives on at each election, should each 30% of your candidates should be women?
Right.
Or should we say to to political parties, on a voluntary basis, you do it? Of course, they may or may not volunteer to do it. And they may argue, well, women, why are we discrediting qualified men to take on more women? And the point of it is we're not saying that. In this particular case, we're saying that a lot of women are equally as qualified as men. But in many cases, they're not given the same opportunities,
right?
In terms of to engage and to have winnable seats and to get to the decision making table, which is cabinet. I believe that at the moment mm-hmm. we have a good representation of women, and I'm very impressed, and I'm mm-hmm. hoping that we can see more women joining the leadership ranks in the Bahamas.
Okay. Wonderful. I especially because of something you just said, I want to get this text in here. The text says, good morning. What if women are reluctant to join or not interested? Should good able-bodied men be penalized for this discriminatory practice or measures? Not only will we be hurting the young men, you'll be hurting the country. Just fix the system or policies by which promotions are awarded. Which brought me to another question. Like you said, that we can go into parties and we can request a special measure of quotas, or at the state level, we can create a quota, right? But what if with further interrogation, we realize that the barriers are deeper than that. Like, could we go in? Do you think it's viable that we go into the political realm and we say to the parties from the state level that the state and civil society have created a set of rules of conduct that we want political parties to apply as a special temporary measure to make an assessment whether after the end of 2 years or after an election cycle, the numbers change?
You know, the thing about it is that, remember, I talked earlier about the importance of doing our homework.
Yeah.
And we need a part of that homework in this context is understanding why women are not coming forward, right? Why is there a reluctance for women to come forward? What is the perception for women? Are they perceived to be equally as good leaders? Are they feeling that, oh gosh, I'm going to be completely, you know, attacked, or I'm going to feel as if I have I'm going to be under scrutiny? You know, what's happening? I think we need to get an understanding before we apply any kind of quota or anything like it.
Yes.
Well, even whether it's I don't believe in imposing. I actually believe in voluntary, starting there, and then having a woman come forward. And as you say, I think once these pathways are made, you may see more women coming. And the more women you see coming, then you begin to assess, okay, how can we ensure that we keep them? What is there now that's drawing them? And how come those few that do go through?
Absolutely.
What is it about them? And it's not written in stone, it's temporary, but also it's something that you may need to shift as things change over time. Right. So it's not to say that I believe that we can't say, all right, we ought not to be saying women should have this and then we impose it on them. We need to put some systems in place to ensure that women are ready for it, that they to understand why they're reluctant, to address those areas that may be discouraging them from doing so. I fundamentally believe that women are excellent leaders and with the right context, they will come forward. There are hesitations, and if they don't come forward, then we understand that that's something that we have to then perhaps consider opening up to men. But I believe that once you open it up, you will see the women come forward. It's almost as if that concept of build it and they will come.
Absolutely. Ganelle,
I believe that seriously.
Absolutely. I got another text here. I got a caller, and then I we can't forget Lauren. I would like Lauren to just tell us briefly about the Strike 5 campaign before we end the show. So let me read this text. It says, Aaron, men are underrepresented in teaching and nursing. Will there be a freeze on hiring women also to spur the numbers in these fields? What jobs are we altering for men to grow in numbers? What about more women in construction? And another quick text, we need to stop carrying other people's issues. This women's rights thing is a fallacy. It angers me whenever I hear about it. It is unjustifiable. And I just want to respond to that last text by saying, dear texter, for me to really sort of understand your text, I need to know if you are a woman or a man. And it's cool. I just want to get a sense of where you're coming from, because I am certain this women's rights thing is not a fallacy. Now, if we want to talk about how power operates in the Bahamas, who owns it, when and where, the spaces in which women expand and operate power over men, over other people, all of it is very complex. But you can't just tell me that women's rights issue is a fallacy in the Bahamas. It is complex. And women do have lots of power, but I would argue with you that they have developed and have learned to wield their powers in particular ways as responses to oppression. So let me get to this caller. Dead quick caller, you got 30 seconds. That's all I could give you.
Good morning, I'd like caller. To address the stigma of women in civil society being a stumbling block to the human rights. You understand me? In this world, you are not one of those such women. Thank you.
Thank you. I got a text here that says, "Who's stopping men from becoming teachers and nurses?" That's absolutely right. Lauren, good morning.
Good morning, Aaron.
Listen, I am so Sorry, I'm going to have you back on. It's a good thing June is a long, long month. You know, that's what parents say because the children coming home from school. But Equality Bahamas, your mandate is promoting women's and LGBTQI rights as human rights through advocacy, community engagement, and public education. Right now, Equality Bahamas is operating a campaign called Strike Five Campaign. I wanted to just mention it briefly because in the newspapers this week, we have a headline, Minister to Meet with Church Leaders to Discuss Marital Rape. And in the article, I don't see any indication that the minister met with or intends to meet with any other civil society or non-governmental organization actors. So I wanted to ask you about the campaign and to ask whether the government has engaged Equality Bahamas or, to your knowledge, any other organizations like Equality Bahamas.
To my knowledge, no, they have not. But I know that article that you were referencing, they mentioned that the church is divided. And so perhaps that's why, you know, that conversation is being prioritized. But we always welcome you know, for government agencies to
engage,
to speak with us and engage with us and seek out our input, because we are very much a human rights organization. And so our mission is informed by international mechanisms like CEDAW that the Bahamas has signed on and has agreed to implement. So in addition to the CEDAW speaker series, we are currently running a Strike Five campaign, which calls for the five words, "who is not his spouse," to be removed from the definition of rape, because this allows for marital rape to not be seen as rape. And, you know, in the last few months, there's been a lot of conversation about criminalizing it, and we call for complete criminalization. And our campaign is really about getting folks aware of things that they can do. So we have a document. It is tiny.cc/strike5ive, where we have lots of information for ways to get involved. So one of the things we encourage the public to do is to write to their members of parliament, the attorney general, and the minister of social services and urban development to support some of the recommendations that we've put forth. And, you know, to just share some of the social media content that we've created to get people aware of the campaign and motivated to do something.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lauren. Now, listen, the texter asked me to ask you all this question again, but I know we don't have enough time to answer it. Plus, you can't answer it. But the Minister of Social Services, the minister responsible for the public service, the Prime Minister could answer it. Men are underrepresented in teaching and nursing. Will there be a freeze on hiring women also to spur the numbers in these fields? Well, listen, right now, they hire in anybody they could find. Teachers and nurses. Anybody they could find. Now, producer, you play that music so I can hurry up and get out of here. But the last text says, Aaron, the Speaker of the House of Assembly is a good example of why women aren't given certain opportunities. When given positions of power, they often become arrogant, rude, and disrespectful towards their male counterparts. Well, listen, I tell you, play that music, producer. You start when anything, because I can sing a song right now. Dear Texter, listen, men continue to be arrogant, rude, and disrespectful towards their male counterparts and their female male counterparts, and show a complete and utter disregard for the system they've been appointed to uphold. And yet, we don't talk about, oh, well, maybe they're going to need to learn how to behave before we let them back in the house.
Exactly.
Dear Texter, there are all kinds of big fancy words to explain how offensive this text is, like patronizing and condescending and a whole bunch of stuff. But let me tell you, if you don't need permission, if man don't need permission to be arrogant and rude and say some of the most vile things inside and outside of the house without the demand that they mother come there to the house and put them over their knee, how dare would you suggest that? This is another example of why I stand with the speaker, even if the speaker wouldn't stand with a rude woman like me. Anyway, ladies, thank you for joining me this morning. Gaynell Curry, human rights expert and member of the UN Forum for People of African Descent, and Lauren Glinton, volunteer for Equality Bahamas. Thank you so very much. We're going to have to pick up this conversation again, maybe on Saturday. See us there. You've been
Thank
on the
you.
Clock with Erin Green. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Guardian Radio AM is up next.
Thank you, Erin.
Thanks.
Oh, yes, I do love you. Take the money, she take the money.